Stellenbosch University's Vilgenhof residence was started in 1903, so it's more than 100 years old. It has many people, clearly, who attended it and feel very affectionate towards it, not least the Vilgenhof Alumni Association, who are represented today by Jaco Rabie. Yesterday was a big day for the residence. There's been all kinds of allegations. There was a report that was put together by quite a rational panel, one might have thought, which, however, has not been fully accepted by the Stellenbosch University Council. Welcome, Mr. Rabie. Nice talking with you. Before we go into the conversation about Vilgenhof, just tell us a little about yourself and your relationship with this residence.
Thanks, Ad. Yeah, I went to Vilgenhof now almost 25 years ago. I was a first year 1997. I'm now one of six Vilgenhof Alumni Association sort of managing committee members. The Vilgenhof Alumni Association represents about 3,500 estimated living old Vilgenhofers. You know, under normal circumstances, our activities are limited to organizing reunions and raising funding for bursaries and that kind of thing. What we've been involved in the last couple of days, weeks, months, I think it's fair to say, is slightly outside of the norm for us.
I think outside of the norm for anybody who looks back on their educational days with some affection, as I mentioned earlier. Within the Stellenbosch University context, how big is this residence? In other words, how many of them are there, and what percentage roughly of the students who stay in on the campus would be in Vilgenhof?
Vilgenhof, in terms of absolute numbers, is not a particularly large residence. It usually fluctuates between sort of 180 to 200 residents. When I was there, closer to 180. It's slightly under correction, but I think it's about 200 now. First years up to fifth year, so postgraduates as well under certain circumstances. The residence is physically located sort of in the heart of campus and Stellenbosch University. You mentioned, of course, that it is a very old residence, 20 plus years old, and it's been occupying the current site since for a majority of that time.
So the story is one of great concern, not just within the university itself, but internationally. There's been a lot of interest. It refers to initiations. It refers to a shadowy committee called the Nachtlichter, for the people who don't understand Afrikaans, that means the night lights. And that goes back to 1914, presumably something to do with resistance to South Africa entering the First World War and so on. Lots of history. But the concerns that were raised by a investigating group, of which appear to be pretty highly reputable people, Advocate De Jager from the Cape Bar, Dr. Swemmer, a former executive at the university, and Ms. van der Bank, deputy registrar at the university now. So you would think that these are people who kind of would get their facts right. A lot of their report, which is freely available for people to read, has been accused of being biased and not exactly accurate. In your statement, you said it was substantially flawed. Help us there. Just help us to understand what parts of that report were quite substantially flawed.
Yeah, I think in general, our objection has been that the report appears to have accepted a lot of sensational media as fact. The report has made extremely general and sweeping conclusions around certain matters, not the least of which is the very broad accusation of racism, white supremacy, even Nazism, and practices echoing that of the KKK. The report makes extensive reliance on so-called expert evidence to buttress a lot of these very far-reaching conclusions. And ultimately, our view is the report simply doesn't deal with the facts or the evidence in a fair and accurate manner. I think it's important to, if you just take a step back for a moment and for me to provide a little bit of context as to how this panel was constituted in the first place and why. The university staff entered the so-called two rooms at Wolfenhof and certain pictures were taken. These pictures wound up in the hands of the press. And I think it's fair to say it unleashed a bit of a media frenzy. The university then, quite rightly, I think, appointed a panel in order to create a space, I think, for some calm deliberation. And as they said, we need to understand exactly what we're dealing with here. We'll appoint a panel to investigate. The Alumni Association supported that move. We thought that was the right thing to do. There was a trial by media going on that was, frankly, just about wholly devoid of any facts and was focused on sensational headline after sensational headline. So we welcomed a more sober and rational sort of conspectus of the situation. And we pledged our full support. And in the view that, you know, the panel would be able to cut through the sensation. I think it's fair to say that we were shocked with what they ultimately produced. Instead of cutting through the sensation, we think they got caught up in it themselves. You mentioned that this is a well-constituted panel with apparently sober and rational minds. I can only speculate as to why they got it so wrong. What I will say is that it's tough when you have to, in a sense, investigate 120 years of history and tradition and complex practice. I think that's made even more difficult when you look at the panel's terms of reference, which, you know, when I first read it, I joked and said, you know, they've just been asked to investigate the history of the world here. I mean, the terms of reference that the panel were provided with were extremely wide and broad, and I think it didn't help them to really get to the nub of the issue. And at some point, they themselves became, in my view, sort of unmoored from the facts. And they arrived at conclusions or statements for which, you know, there simply is no evidence at best. And in some cases, such as these allegations of racism, these allegations are just wholly and utterly devoid of any truth. I mean, I cannot state it strongly enough how completely and utterly wrong the allegations of racism and Nazism and the implications of it that are mentioned in the report, how completely and utterly wrong those implications are. We've rejected them in public forcefully before, and we're going to continue to reject them in public. Those are incredibly impactful and serious allegations to make. And I think it is right to say that the Alumni Association, both of alumni, but also don't forget the existing residents in Wilgelhof, have been extremely distressed and impacted by the allegations of racism.
It's all kind of confusing to those of us who never went to Stellenbosch University. The university I went to had no initiation. It would have been absurd even to think about it, but in KZN University. But at school, high school, there was a lot of initiation. It was the kind of practices that now seems so archaic. And I guess let's just go into Wilgenhof. Was this Nachlichter organization, did it exist? Because it appears from the very outset of the report that was put together that there was this group of fellows who were internal disciplinary grouping who handed out secret notes. And if you had broken one of the rules, you were then treated pretty harshly. It's all in the report to read. Does it exist? Does initiation continue at the university? Leave the racism out of it for the moment. And is there those two rooms that were opened by supposedly or seen by those who were investigating, did you ever go into it yourself? I think that's really where I'm trying to get to. Is this true? Was this thing around?
Yeah, I think firstly, we have to draw a distinction here between initiation and the activities of the disciplinary committee stroke the Nachlicht. Now, initiation is not in issue here. Insofar as there is a welcoming program for new first years at Wilgenhof, and for that matter at other residences, that is a program which is monitored and is known to and is ultimately reported upon by the university. They have independent monitors in the residence during the first couple of weeks of the first term when new students and new residents arrive. And there are outside observers to monitor the welcoming program. So what we are talking about here and what the panel was seized with was not, as has been described in some quarters, toxic initiation practices. This is not a discussion around initiation. And certainly I and the Alumni Association and Wilgenhof residents today would agree with you that the kind of initiation that we remember from, for example, our high school days, clearly would not have a place today, neither in high schools nor at a university. So that's the initiation side of things. Turning to the Nachlicht of the disciplinary committee, this was the democratically elected disciplinary committee of the residents that were known to all of the residents and were elected to ultimately enforce the rules that apply to all residents. And these are rules such as times that you have to study, when you're not allowed to make noise, general conduct in and around the building, the kind of rules that one would find at need in any place where you've got 200 young people, young men between the ages of 18 and 22 living together. And the disciplinary committee were elected to ensure that the rules were followed. So this was not a secretive organization enacting arbitrary sanction at all hours of the night and morning, as again has been portrayed. Wilgenhof had a clear and transparent process whereby if rules were transgressed, the transgressor would be informed. There was an opportunity to make representations, the same way that one would have the opportunity to make representations in a criminal proceeding, for example. There was an opportunity to admit to guilt, the same way that you admit to guilt on a speeding fine, for example, where you're not going to contest. And then there were sanctions applied. Now, the important point here as well is that a lot of what was seen in the media and that was focused on by the panel are really practices that have long since ceased to take place. It's one of the key mistakes, in my view, that the panel makes is that they get the timelines that are relevant here completely wrong. The point is, Volkhonov is not some archaic and ossified institution where practices of yesteryear are blindly being enforced and forced upon residents in the 21st century. That is a complete misrepresentation in the press of what is in fact going on. The practices and traditions over a 120-year history are complex, but they have also adjusted and been adapted over that time. And I think the panel here and a lot of the reporting did not pay sufficient attention to how much has changed over the last 20, 25 odd years. And it's really difficult when you have snippets of information that turn up in the press and these things are reported and again opined upon by the panel as if what happened then is happening without any adjustment or change today.
But those rooms that they refer to that were opened, and the two rooms, I guess that's the hard evidence that the panel references, that there were Nazi-type symbols and other white supremacy symbols there. Is that, in your opinion, just something that hadn't been cleaned up in the past? Or what do you make of that?
The two rooms that are referred to is, one is an archive. In other words, this is a room where archival material over 120-year history was held. And, you know, this would be, I would say, this is similar to a members-only room at a club. So, as I explained, over its 120-year history, Volkhonov has a complex history. That is a very long period of time. And archival material collected over that time, if simply placed in the media without any context and then reported upon with a very sensationalist kind of slant, is going to look strange to outsiders. I mean, I accept that. And as for the other room, again, where pictures of graffiti on the wall, we accept that to outsiders looking at these pictures without any context, looking at them completely cold, and then I have to emphasize receiving an awful lot of just misrepresentation and misinformation around what is being represented here. Of course, it is going to be difficult for people to form an accurate opinion. I think what's important is the panel in their own report, firstly, don't spend very much time on the content of the so-called two rooms, mainly because there isn't much to spend time on. Secondly, the panel find unambiguously, this is a finding that they make, I think in paragraph 266 of the report, that during their investigation, there is no evidence of physical violence or armed or sexual violence, as has been reported in the press, being meted out by the disciplinary committee in any Wolfenhof. And I think this is important because these two rooms were described in the press as being sort of ground zero for dark and abusive practices. So it really should be emphasized that the panel made it explicitly clear that there was no evidence of this. And again, these rooms and their contents simply reflect a very long history. They represent mostly, as I say, archival material. And these rooms simply were not in use for the purpose as described in the media.
So if I understand this correctly, a little bit like some of the other great universities of the world, and we know from Yale and Harvard and many of the Ivy League schools in the United States, there are secret societies or were secret societies, and there are movies about them, and there's lots of abuse that has come through, and all of those stories that were in the media. Perhaps, if I listen to you correctly, perhaps that existed in Stellenbosch University, and I don't think anybody who was involved is going to tell us, because I guess that was, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas kind of thing. But by the issue that's at hand now, that's not happening at the moment. People aren't being woken up in the middle of the night. They aren't being taken to secret rooms naked and then told to drink toxic substances, etc. That there's a clear set of rules that everybody knows within the residence, and those rules need to be enforced, because you do have 18 to 22 year olds with perhaps lots of freedom on their hands for the very first time. And as a consequence of that, there is not a hell of a big story here from your context. But I suppose where we are today is that story has been publicized. You have had, Wolfenhof has had a really rough ride in the media. And the University Council sat earlier this week and decided to suspend, not to throw out, the report. In other words, to suspend the idea that Wolfenhof must be closed down. So what happens now, if your version of events is accurate and the panel that investigated, the three people who investigated, have actually exaggerated things, who would make that decision and when?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think, firstly, we're of course very heartened that the council have taken a breath here and have taken a step back and said, we need more information and probably need more time to fully understand this, and was to fully understand what would be the implications of closing the residence, as was recommended. Because of course, we're speaking about the past, we're speaking about the alumni association's kind of views here and our relationship to the past, but it has to be kept in view that, in my opinion, the group that suffers the most here, and in some ways probably has suffered the most and that are most exposed, are the current residents of Wolfenhof. This situation and the media frenzy and the panel investigation and the recommendations, I think has impacted them the most, because they are the ones that live in the residence at the moment, that understand how utterly devoid of truth these allegations are, but are facing a backlash on campus in some cases for being part of what is being described as at best a very toxic culture and residence. So I think as we go forward here and as additional information is put on the table, the views of the residents and what they think of the residents, and here especially given the allegations that the views of black, colored, Indian, Jewish residents become very important. So I think the council will have to listen closely to what the current residents of Wolgenhof actually say and think about Wolgenhof. Again, this is not something that is at all clear from the panel's investigation, that they spent enough time canvassing in detail the views of people that are currently in Wolgenhof and that have recent history and experience in the residence. So I think that's an important component, that their voice needs to come forward. And then we want to assist the council in getting to where they want to be, which is, and where we're aligned with them, a university and a residence that is inclusive, that is built on dignity and respect, and that has a place at a modern and first class university. Again, you know, I want to emphasize Wolgenhof and the Alumni Association. We are not here to try and enforce stale traditions from the past. The Alumni Association, together with the residents, have been working very hard in recent years to drive renewal, to drive transformation. This is important to us. It's very important to us. This is a residence that hasn't just been speaking about transformation. We've put money behind it. There's a bursary program that is funded by Alumni of Wolgenhof in order to expand access and opportunities, as one example. So there was a renewal and a culture survey done with independent outside experts coming in 2020 to better understand the culture of the residents, to better understand how we can drive renewal. The residents itself produced what they call the so-called Wolgenhof Manifesto after that process, whereby they committed to being a residence built on individuality, respect, critical thinking, sense of community, and that they are completely aligned with where the university wants to take things in terms of being a first-class institution. So we're on the same side of the debate there with the university. Again, we think the panel didn't spend nearly enough time trying to understand and understanding how far and how much this residence has already done on this renewal journey. So our objective is going to be to emphasize these points to the council, and that the residents should be allowed to continue what it's already started and what's been driven from inside the residents, not the Alumni Association. Credit there should go to the residents itself. They're ultimately the ones that has to do all of this. You know, it's we're there to, and in all the circumstances, take care of reunions and bursaries. They are the ones that have to drive the change, but they have shown a willingness and an intent to do this.
Jaco Rabie is with the Wolgenhof Alumni Association. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.